This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
And finally, this question. The mystery of whose story it will be.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Underrated Podcast. We are a podcast that discuss films that we think are underrated, underappreciated, and those that just slipped under the radar and passed most people by. Today, we are going to be talking about my choice, of course, which is Sucker Punch. It's the 2011 film that Zack Snyder wrote and directed, considered as one of his only two, I would guess, original IPs. It stars as the main character, Emily Browning, as well as another slew of actors such as Vanessa Hudgens, Abby Cornish, Jenna Malone, and Jamie Chung. Oh, and of course, you cannot. Oh, and Carla, how do you say
Carla Gugino?
Gugino. Yeah. And then, of course, we cannot forget our main man, Oscar Isaac Hernandez de Estrada.
I have a crush on all of them.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. And, but yeah, this is, my choice. I have had a really good relationship with this movie. First off, for those that are like have seen it at least just once, I would say, and kind of like have thought, oh, really? That movie? Yes, that movie, because I think that it's actually a really good movie. And we'll get into that discussion as well. Start off, as always, my co-hosts are Derek McDuff and Alan Torres.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Let's go round table and I'll leave myself to last since this is my movie and I have some thoughts and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. Did you want to go first, Alan?
Yeah, I wanted to go into it first because I actually wanted to hear more about what you guys had to say about it. Because I feel like I guess I'm very passive on it. I really like this movie and I always enjoyed it. I've seen it a couple times. And I kind of for a while, this was kind of in the back of my mind as an underrated film. Even I had a thought of doing as well, but I'm glad Ariel brought it up. But
yeah,
I dug it. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, well, I just wanted to like say off the bat that like one of the things like I had found while like kind of watching YouTube videos of like other people's opinions on this and stuff, I had only seen, I do not think like in the bit that I like was watching videos and reading comments, I did not see actually a negative review of this movie. I saw a lot of saying that this is, I enjoy this movie a lot. I really like the tone of it. I really like the message of it. And also as well, which kind of constitutes why it's on this podcast and why we're reviewing it. A lot of people saying that this is a very underrated film, and it definitely was possibly considering still at the time. I know I've heard some podcasts that have kind of unfairly like pushed this movie into the ground, and then of course it wasn't received well with the general audience as well as the critics as well. So yeah, but that was the tone, at least on the internet, as of me looking things up and stuff. So yeah.
No, I agree with you on that. I remember when the movie came out, I wanted to go watch it in theaters, and I think I just didn't have the chance to.
Mm.
I think I was reading it came out roughly around the same time as, like, Deathly Hallows Part 1 came mm-hmm. out. So mm-hmm. that might have been one of the big things.
Mm-hmm. It's really good in the theater. I watched it in theater. It's actually really good. Yeah.
Nice. It actually took me a couple of years. I don't think I saw it until, like, maybe like 2 years ago, and then I kind of watched it back in every now and again. But I remember reading all that stuff too. No one said a bad thing about it from what I remember. I know some people at the time were kind of like, the biggest complaint I heard was like, oh, it kind of feels like a very long music video, which I can agree with on some segments, because it really does feel like it's like a bunch of, oh my God, what's the word? Vignettes?
Yeah.
Vignette mm-hmm. like of like segments, you know, with the samurai stuff, and then mm-hmm. that, like, the World War II stuff, like everything like that kind of had like its music to it, and it was a whole scene. And obviously, you know, I get what Zack Snyder was trying to do with it. I guess that's my only complaint with it. It's not really like a complaint, I should say. It's more of just like, yeah, it's very music video-y. But yeah, I remember at the time, nobody really disliked it. I think it was just too many other popular movies were coming out at the time. And then that's when, I mean, now we're kind of living in this like very big IP reigning kind of world where like an existing IP is flourishing at the movies and on TV right now. Like, it's impossible to go anywhere without seeing it. So I think that at the time that was like the big start of it, especially with the MCU growing and, you know, Avengers was going to be out the following year. Yeah. And I think too, it's because I will say Zack Snyder's previous films were a little bit more, I guess, like action oriented. I mean, this one's very action oriented, but it was very like male kind of dominated in a way. 300. And then Watchmen. Watchmen, you still had, you know,
Silk Spectre.
Thank you. But at the same time, it was very like 300 was his like big fucking movie. Like it was like fucking men and capes and underwear. Boom, like pre Superman kind mm-hmm. of thing. So I feel like even reading the comments about Baby Dolls, I forgot the actress's name.
Emily Browning.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Even she was saying that, like, that scene that you had told us, this is before we were recording, Ariel mentioned of, like, this, like, secret ending or deleted scene ending. And I was reading about that, and even she was kind of like, yeah, this movie is going to be R-rated, but they were trying to push for a PG-13, and it was the same scene, and they were trying to show Baby Doll kind of taking control of that scene. It was a sex scene, essentially, or getting to it.
Insinuated.
Insinuated sex scene.
Which isn't the first of this movie. Like, there's like mm-hmm. there's times where truly like they are preyed upon by predators and things like that. But that scene itself was supposed to be kind of contrasting in a way of like of taking back that kind of power and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what kind of leads into the final scene. Well, the scene that we see at the beginning or start of the beginning and then end on with the lobotomy, which I would like to talk about later of the lobotomy itself scene and that kind of in meaning and stuff like that. But yeah, that's what like kind of like the playing around with the R rated. And of course, like it wouldn't be a Zack Snyder film without there being a director's cut to this movie mm-hmm. because I think this is still Warner Brothers, right? This mm-hmm. was this is like just this little like glimpse into how Warner Brothers, you know, kind of like handled Zack Snyder movies. So leave it at that kind of thing.
Even mm-hmm. that far back, like mm-hmm. even, you know, before Batman v Superman and Justice League, they were still, you know, even Watchmen has like
an extended Watchmen that has a whole thing about mm-hmm. like the fucking these two guys are like, we've got the same name. And it's like, where's that going to come up again in Zack Snyder?
Oh, the like the Black Freighter stuff?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. That's a discussion. That's for another thing.
Yeah.
Because I love Watchmen. I'll get into that. Too. But Yeah, even she said that apparently the Warner Brothers execs were like, well, she seems a little too aggressive or something like that. And they had a, Zach had to edit it in a way where John Hamm was being more aggressive on her. And the execs were like, yeah, that's fine. And then Zach was like, I don't like that. That's bullshit. That takes away the whole point of the scene. And it was taken out.
I will say that he did say that that version that the quote unquote director's cut is like not his real version. It would be interesting to see that because I do still have. I won't get into it too much, but I do still have a lot. I do have some, a lot of problems with that scene, and I think that the theatrical cut for me was a much superior cut because I think the way that scene like is plays in the movie doesn't really work with everything else that's been set up. And I don't really, I don't know what if it was his vision, but he has gone and said like even the director's cut is not what he was really planning to do because there was, so there is a third version out there somewhere probably that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I think it was Snyder more a lot more, which while it has the undertones of like consent and stuff like that, and that's where the difference comes between those two, the her experience in the asylum beforehand and then her experience now and the representation of it. I think that what Alan was saying of like how the original cut was of it being even more vocal and like up front with her like essentially representation of consent.
And that's what I'm and, saying, like, yeah, that we don't that. Have that version. I don't really want to go into that too much necessarily because I do want to talk about what I really like about the movie, and specifically I really, really like the theatrical cut of it, but I'll let you continue, Alan.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought that scene that we're kind of bringing up, you guys can just go on YouTube, look it up. It's just, you know, the delete an ending.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. You could watch. You could watch it like in addition to the theatrical ending if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of time when I see deleted scenes, I'm like, eh, that's cool, but it never really gets me any other way, unless it's like a purposeful, you know, like the Snyder Cut for Justice League, where it's like this is how it's intended. I'm like, sure, but if it's that's what it is, I'm like, cool. I enjoy the ending, the theatrical cut. Ending a lot more anyways. I feel like it was a lot more hopeful. So I dug that a lot more.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, all around I really dug the movie. It's a lot of fun. Very, you know, action oriented. A lot of anime a lot of anime, you know, a lot of like anime inspired kind of stuff with like the you know, the girls wearing kind of like schoolgirl outfits and kind of giving them off a little bit of a Sailor Scout.
Exactly.
So I dug that, of course, easily. I'm a big Sailor Moon fan, so I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. And
going off of that, do you think that if it was released like at the right time, not much competition, which nowadays you can find that special time in a movie theater with not much competition, do you think, especially with a lot more of an explosion, I know that anime was already getting prominent in 2011, but I think even nowadays it is a lot more prominent, especially among female viewers as well. Do you think that if this movie was released like nowadays with this kind of like popularization with anime, this movie would probably be viewed a lot? Because that I got exactly like with this rewatch, I got very much like this is like essentially like a mix of like all these different shogans and animes, and because that's what anime is essentially, like all these different kind of versions of like Middle Earth kind of feeling, or you know, samurais or even World War II or
World War One,
and all that. And yeah, like do you think that it might have gotten a bit more like exposure but also appreciation?
Yes and no, because if we went by the same way as how we've been going on, you know, I think like there's like a weird thing with Zack Snyder nowadays.
I know, that's true too.
I do want to get into that. He has his like big cult followers, and I love Zack Snyder. I'm not one of those like fucking like, oh my god, anything else is trash. I'm like, I like his stuff. But I also know when there's something, I'm like, eh, it's whatever. Like, I still haven't seen Army of the Dead. And I'm like, I'll get to it one day. I loved his remake of Dawn of the Dead and all the other stuff he's done. But I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh my fucking God. Da, da, da. Like, Sucker Punch, I won't lie, is probably my least favorite of the things I've seen of him. Right. But it's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Yeah,
it's just, it's kind of like, what Quentin Tarantino movie do you like least? And it's like, fuck, well, I don't know. But I think it would go well nowadays. I think if maybe there wasn't that whole rap with him, the whole repertoire with him going on.
Which is I think, in this, like, or people were like, oh, this movie's just like him stroking his ego, which it's like you kind of like called it a little too early. Like, I could see where you could make that argument nowadays, especially with the whole push of like the release of the Snyder Cut by fans and stuff like that, which, you know, in itself, like, if it didn't, the fans tainted it, which fans nowadays like kind of taint a lot of things, but which
he did bring a little bit of it on. It was more his fans, but he didn't discourage them, and that is kind of plays into his whole libertarian / objectivist philosophy. Yeah.
But I will say
David Ayers is a little worse right now. He's really like egging it on, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. But yeah, like, I mean, like, very much so. Like, I know that this was like kind of people starting like kind of troll in that direction, and that kind of contributed to like at least like the pop culture scene having that opinion on this film. But yeah, I get what you're saying with like definitely nowadays, yeah, that connotation and reputation kind of have like a little bit more of a kind of impression on this movie. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, but no, I definitely think it could probably get along nowadays. Like 10 years ago, you know, or 2011, 11 years ago, whatever, it anime was completely different. It was not completely different, but in the American pop culture, it wasn't as strong as it is today, where, you know, it's everywhere now. Like, it's just, it's kind of becoming the it's included to the pop culture now. But yeah. But yeah, Derek, I'd like to hear what you got to say.
I mean, honestly, I kind of, to answer Ariel's question and kind of lead into my thoughts, I do not think this film would do well today, because I think this film is, of all of the movies that we've covered, this was one of the first ones I think I had bookmarked of wanting to talk about eventually, and I'm really glad you decided to talk about it, because I think this film we'll talk about films a lot of times, and it's like, okay, well, this film did well critically, but it did bad financially, or people liked it, it's a big cult following, but it doesn't. As I had a very different experience than you guys, where I felt like no one I've encountered liked this film. And people I've seen on the internet, people I've known in my real life, I've maybe known one person other than you guys who's a really big fan of this, other than myself. I feel like this film, from the critics, from moviegoers, from just general population on YouTube, and I know you said you had a different experience, Ariel, but like almost everything that I found, because I have been watching a few like Snyder videos and breakdowns and stuff recently, and people have been very, very critical of it. And just even Snyder's own very, very, like we said, vocal fan base, who is always like out here just like aggressively pushing for all his films, you never really even hear about that from that side of it. So I think that everyone just kind of missed the boat on this, and I don't know that time would have really changed that. I think it's another, like, we spent a whole miniseries talking about these quote-unquote big swings, and I think this is another big swing. It's a big, interesting intellectual property that has all these crazy effects, and it, I just think, you know, it ran into the same problems that, like, an Alita Battle Angel or a Tomorrowland or any of these films that we talked about in the past ran into, even something like John Carter. They run into the same problems. But this film, to me, this is, and I know that I had the exact opposite feeling with you, Alan. This, to me, is my favorite Zack Snyder film. This is Zack Snyder's masterpiece. Thank you, Ariel. Because this movie, I think, it is a lot of, because this is one of the only original adaptations that, or non-adaptations that he has. This
is original.
Original film, you know, it's not based on a comic book like so many of his movies are, so you don't have like the Frank Miller seeping in, these other worldviews that I do think that, you know, I think a lot of his more toxic fans identify things that are not Zack Snyder, that maybe come through the adaptations of other people's works and stuff that aren't really him. And I think this was his chance to really show us who he is and what he believes in. Because, you know, Zack Snyder, people, the kind of right claims him, like people who are very, like, very conservative and very, like, angry white dudes kind of claim him as one of their own. And he's like, I'm not, you know, that's not me. He's like, he endorsed Joe Biden. He's like, hey, I'm a liberal guy. Like, he's gone on the record and said that. And he kind of like is a little confused by the people who are his fans that are very much have an opposite political view of him. And I think that he is very much someone who is supportive of people of color and especially women, like under, you know, people who are not straight white dudes. He has been, and even though a lot of people project things into some of his works that I think are maybe there, maybe not, maybe are relics of other things that he's adapting, this is his kind of proving that, like, he is, you know, he does really want to do something for that. And you can see that even in, like, the casting of Jason Momoa as Aquaman and stuff like that. But this movie really here is kind of him saying, like, yeah, there are so many male-driven, male-led stories. And he's like, yeah, and I have been a big part of that. Obviously, 300 is the big one that's all about just macho masculinity and just, like, the male thing. And this is kind of about people taking their stories back, because that's what this movie speaks to me so well. And you guys were kind of hinting at it. And I think that the whole movie really does a good job of being like, yeah, when you are someone who is in a position where you do not have as much power just by the way you are born. And it's saying, like, there is this kind of, like, toxic masculinity that permeates the culture and just kind of keeps so many people down, especially women. And this movie is about how, like, women are kept down. And what this movie is essentially saying is that people can tell stories, and these stories, like, film is an incredible tool. Film is this tool that takes these stories and lets people reclaim the narratives of their not lives and kind of reach and kind of shape things to the way that they should be, the way they want them to be seen. And while Baby Doll is doing these lewd acts that are just for the performance of men, that are these, you know, just this should, what would be the male gaze, instead, she's reforming that and making this badass, just awesome action scene with just a bunch of women. And I think that is so cool. And I think that the Scott Glenn character is maybe almost like an audience avatar, or not an audience avatar, a director avatar, or so Snyder himself, of him being like, okay, here, I'm just going to kind of set this up and I want to give it to you. I want to, like, make this story about the women and about the stories that they can tell. And I think that is so cool. And as someone who is a storyteller myself, I think that is incredibly powerful. And I think that was something, that message was just missed by so many people or misinterpreted, both by people who want to, that support Snyder, and by don't, kind of really missed out on all of that. And I really love the movie. Something that you see as a recurring thing in so many of Snyder's films is the kind of the sacrifice by the hero in the end of the film. That comes through here, and it's there. Someone sacrifices themselves so that, you know, the rest of the people can live on. And he does it obviously in a different way here, but it is still with, you know, I do think that the lobotomy scene as presented in the theatrical cut for me is very powerful, and it mirrors a lot of the, see, you always have someone getting skewered by something sharp in a lot of Snyder movies. And I watched a really interesting video essay recently that was talking about how one of Snyder's favorite films ever, and a film that is so important to him, is the 1980s film Excalibur, which kind of ends with, you know, spoiler for a myth from the 700s or whatever, but someone getting, like, King Arthur getting skewered by a lance. And that is something that kind of he's echoed so much in his work. I think he doesn't get enough credit for this film. I think this film doesn't get enough credit for being an absolute real masterpiece. And, you know, obviously, Zack Snyder's a white dude. I'm a white dude. But I think, you know, him being, especially at that time, people were not getting the power to tell their own stories. And this was maybe his attempt to be like, I want to kind of give stories back to these people, because obviously women are very important in Snyder's life. This film is dedicated to the memory of his mother, who had died a year before. you know, Snyder had three daughters at the time. One of them tragically was lost in suicide. So obviously the women in his life have been really, really impactful to him. And you can see that in this film quite a bit.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
No, I definitely agree with everything that you said, and like just the message, and that the core message of this movie is to fight back. Like so many characters like say that line, starting with Carla Gugino, and that's just the core theme of this movie, of this fighting back, and especially, you know, a powerful message for women and stuff like that, and like you have this, yeah, like this very diverse character list of these four, or five women, I mean, and just, yeah, like how powerful it can be. One of the videos I was watching on this, they like said and interpreted that all the men in this film are very physical and like, and to these women, but all the women are like using their minds and their and all these like tactics instead to win over to essentially win this fight, this game and stuff like that. And kind of like to address the elephant in the room of why a lot of people didn't get this, I think has to lie on the boundary to like this imagery and this kind of story of like essentially layers and very in speaking of a movie that came out just a year before this of Inception, it is very much an Inception if you think of it like that, which like that's why I'm like, you guys didn't get it, like you guys, like it's basically Inception. You have the first, just to start off to set the layers, you have the first layer that's seen essentially in the first 5 minutes of the movie. That is like what we can consider as real life. You know, she accidentally kills her sister after her mom died. Her stepfather is trying to take all their money and stuff like that. So he basically sends her to an asylum. To penetrate my own thoughts, but the fact that it is set in, I guess, like the early 60s or something like that, 60s, 70s, sometime around there, is just a testament of like, yeah, this was kind of real life of women, you know, always having that kind of like hysteria kind of thing and placed on them. Specifically in the 60s, 70s, this was happening to a lot of people. I mean, you have one flew over the cuckoo's nest at the same about the same time as well. Yeah, so like women were like pushed into these asylums because they acted out, and for it's kind of implied with Rocket, and Sweet Pea kind of like got pulled in with her because she was probably trying to protect her, and so they got put in here. You know, probably similar stories happened to Amber and Blondie, and yeah, so that's the first layer. That's the real life, which we also see at the end as well. But then you enter the second layer, which, you know, it could be argued whether that is Sweet Peas, which I kind of have interpreted as being Sweet Peas, kind of like level of imaginary to survive and stuff like that. And then the final layer is Baby Dolls, with all the action-y kind of things as well. And just, yeah, like people have a problem with the imagery of this movie, I would say, and the metaphor, because this whole movie is essentially like all metaphorical of a yes. movie. But all these actions are happening. Like, we get that confirmation at the end of at least, like, you know, like, she helped somebody escape, which was Sweet Pea. And mm-hmm. she did stab Oscar Isaac's orderly. And so those are real events. Like, we start off in real world and we end in real world. It's not like we're left with some kind of going back to like that, the big swings, like, you know, Valerian kind of world where it's like, what the frick is going on here? You know, kind of world. It's a very, like, if you take it as it should have been interpreted and how it's meant to be interpreted, these are just fantasies, which are very common for the people going through trauma and stuff like that. They create fantasies. They create a fantastical world. It's a very, very mentally real story, you know, when you think of it like that. And it's such a powerful, strong story to be told of, you know, just women and that this is like I've voiced it like on our Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones, and now it's kind of getting traction of how kind of like pushy kind of a scene it was. But with this is how you're supposed to do like women empowerment, in my opinion. Not in this, in especially in a kind of like a superhero kind of movie. Not that kind of like we're out of nowhere kind of scene in Avengers Endgame that doesn't make any sense logically. I mean, logistically, of where these women were on the battlefield. But and that's getting traction. I've seen like finally a video saying that is out of place. Like, yes. Validation.
Really? Barely?
Yes.
I've been hearing about it since Endgame came out.
Yeah, the weekend it came out, I was talking to my friend about it, and she was just like, she was so pissed.
I know.
Yeah, even just, the boys parodied.
Yes, the Barry. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they exactly. The whole, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because the boys usually like parody Snyder, mm-hmm. but they did. Yeah. That was the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So this movie is how mm-hmm. you're supposed to do it, because it's such. It just is a, in my opinion, just a such a subtle way, and you get those relationships like built so easily through this fantasy that it becomes even more believable. And that I would say that second layer, which is the most like the majority of like some pretty much realistic, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, this movie could be interpreted a lot of ways, because there is a lot of ways like you could see it. Is like we kind of know that Rocket, and because they're present in that real time, in my opinion, the real world scene at the beginning when she comes into the first time into the theater, and her and Oscar Isaac and her stepfather are talking behind her. So Rocket, Amber, and Blondie are present in that scene, but the thing that kind of is like up into interpretation is like they weren't really, their deaths weren't really mentioned in the end with the real world. So that's the only thing that I'm like, which is a good thing. Like, it's a mm-hmm. really good thing. And just finally, before I like stop my rant and stuff like that, finally with that final scene with the lobotomy scene, I think it's definitely like one of the most powerful scenes. I really think that's really awesome as well, to kind of show it at the beginning and then at the end, which also leaves that whole middle part into interpretation, is like, is this kind of like her baby doll's interpretation of her whole time, that whole week that she was there before the lobotomy. But like, I just, this idea of lobotomy overall, I think in a lot of different movies and media, is kind of like this thing of like either being a release or kind of like seen as like kind of something like that, which is kind of, lobotomy is essentially, you know, you like disconnect part of your cornea in the brain and stuff like that. And it's like, for some instances it could help with seizures, others it's kind of like it's just kind of hard to do. It's like a kind of like a medieval kind of thing nowadays. But I just wanted to like kind of like connect two different instances of like things that I've like watched, media that I've watched that had lobotomies, that kind of like shows the kind of like parallel to this lobotomy in this movie of like, there's like the song before the lobotomy in like American Idiot, but also in like depicted in American Idiot, the musical, of like the loss of some of control over your life kind of thing. That's kind of like an interpretation. If you've ever seen that musical, you get the sense it comes right before like shit hits the fan, everything in that musical. And then that's kind of like that loss of control of your own life, which this movie also like it kind of has that interpretation leading into the lobotomy. But then also like you connect it to another popular movie that has a lobotomy in it of Shutter Island. And
yeah, very I was much wondering if you're going to say parallels. That.
Yeah, yeah, very much see the parallels between the Leonardo DiCaprio's character and the ambiguity.
Spoiler alert.
Of it. Yeah, sorry, spoiler alert.
It's okay, that movie's meh.
That movie's fucking great, Alan. Shut up.
I thought it was mad as fuck.
We're going to cover it next week. We're going to fucking cover it next week.
The ambiguousness of both Baby Doll and Leonardo DiCaprio's character in that, mm-hmm. of like them, is this like also like a release of pain of and then also of having a final control over your life, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like this is a choice. Like I think that's something that both those characters share of like they want to forget. They want that release. They want that release of the pain that they feel. They want to forget everything, essentially. And but also in doing that, it's like they're finally taking control of their life, which is a control that they lost. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, connecting those two kind of like instances of media, pop culture media that I know of like essentially, yeah, before the lobotomy and then the lobotomy itself. So yeah,
and one step further too, I think both of them are feeling like. That this is like they're almost sacrificing themselves, like Baby Doll by getting this lobotomy. It's like, you know, a death basically to her, and she's sacrificing herself for the greater good of, you know, helping someone escape and get out because she knows she can't. And then Leonardo DiCaprio is kind of sacrificing himself because he feels like he no longer really deserves to have a life. Like he has that line at the end about being a monster and stuff. So I think that's you know something that definitely another parallel between those two scenes. But I wanted to kind of circle back to what you were saying about the levels and just the being open to interpretation and the parallels you saw with it Inception, because I saw a lot of parallels with Inception as well. But when I, you know, first saw it back and it came out, you know, the year or so after Inception, and I drew a lot of parallels. And I think that this one also, I think just like Inception is ambiguous. And at the end, you're like, what was, you know, you're think you know the end, and but you're wondering if what was real and what wasn't. I think this one does that really well too, because it does pepper in things that's like, okay, on the most, you know, just the kind of basic reading there is that the quote-unquote top level is the real world. But I think it even makes you question that, because it does say to you, like, even that is a story, because Zack Snyder is kind of telegraphing, like, yeah, this is all a story. Stories give you power. And because the movie opens... it opens with her room, but her room is a stage, and it's the same mm-hmm. exact stage that she sees when she goes into the hospital later. So it's kind of giving you that, like, wait a minute, how is her room the same exact stage? What is he trying to say with this? And it is adding that ambiguity and saying, like, yeah, so maybe this is real, maybe it's not, maybe this whole thing is just a story. You're not sure where the story ends and where the reality begins, and you know, he's kind of saying, like, he's telegraphing to that and said, yeah, this entire thing, well, maybe not telegraphing enough because people didn't get it, but I think he's saying to the audience that, like, yeah, this whole thing is a metaphor. This whole, all of these stories, this Russian doll of a movie of stories within stories are all, this is obviously all a story. This is a movie that you're watching now. You have to take this into the real world. And, you know, I think that's now more important now than ever. We're recording this like a day after, you know, we had a very pivotal election where we are fighting for, you know, honestly, we're fighting for women's rights, you know, and that's what this movie is saying. It's like you have to go out and take these things that you saw in the movie into the real world. And I think that is, like I said, more prevalent now than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It doesn't, it's definitely like plays into kind of that bringing you in literally as an into the movie as an audience member with that scene. Very similar to something that, you know, something that I covered in You've Never Seen of Moulin Rouge, kind of like, and multiple different movies have opened like that, but it is, it does definitely like lead into that. And I do kind of like agree with you that just that interpretation of like, you, this is a story first and foremost, and that's what's the most important thing. A story has a message, a story has a theme, and I think that this is very much like, that's why like people like, get confused about this movie and stuff like that, and like all these things like, and get so confused that they get frustrated. But
I do want to say, I mean, just take I do want to say back. One big thing.
Yeah, yeah,
I think it's also the advertising, because I remember at the time,
yeah,
it was very much sold as like a very hardcore action movie with girls kind of thing. It was very like, look at this. And I think that's another big reason, because like lately I've seen people say, yeah, it's good. But back then, just to backtrack a little bit, I did hear a lot of people that had seen it. You reminded me, Derek, that people were like, it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I think people went in with expectations just like Crimson Peak. Crimson Peak was very much sold as a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
Movie, when in reality it's a gothic romance.
No, I feel
it's the Uninvited.
Exactly. No, I love Peak.
And real fast, I will say, like, on that note, like, I remember the person that I saw Sucker Punch with, and I came out, I was like, I loved it. What did you think? And he's like, I'm mad we didn't get to see her dance. She was supposed to have the sexiest dance ever. And I was like, you missed the whole point of the fucking movie. That's the entire point, dude.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's fucking, everybody just goes over their head, and then they get complaining. Then they get complaining. It's just like, if it goes over your head, watch it again, kind of thing. Which I definitely recommend, even though I like this movie. And I mean, I think it is, like, I agree with you, Derek. I think it has to go down as my favorite Zack Snyder movie. Even for me, like, even watching it for this recording, I was like, I get more understanding of it. It is definitely a movie that you have to take your time with and like think about and stuff like that. But I really do hope that like with our commentary, you kind of like take that view into your next viewing of this movie. If you're still like kind of frustrated by it still. So yeah.
Because there's definitely people who, I would say, you know, like, there's video essays and stuff I watch of people who know, like, are incredibly knowledgeable about film, who've broken this down, and whose just interpretations I just fundamentally disagree with about this movie and about a lot of Snyder films. So I think, you know, maybe because it is a little vague, it is a little open to interpretation, and that also then is open to misinterpretation.
Yeah. I think the core theme of this podcast is, if you're confused by this movie, go and watch a few Leonardo DiCaprio movies. You'll get the picture. You'll understand.
Django Unchained? Yes.
Django Unchained.
Django!
A bit. I mean,
love Django Unchained. It's so good.
Like, Oscar Isaac's really, like, you get frightened, like, scene, which is just a testament of how great of a villain he could play too. Yeah. Besides,
he hasn't really been a lot of villains. Like, and it's crazy because this was like before he was really a thing. Mm-hmm. But like, he was just like this great seething villain in this. I loved it.
I cannot freaking. That's one of the things to hope for Moon Knight season two. One of the things I want Moon Knight season two so bad is that he is his own fucking villain. That would be freaking amazing to see, like, just him going against himself. I would just, and he could pull it off. Oh my gosh. I want Moon Knight more, of course. But
Ex Machina, he was pretty terrifying in that.
That's true.
Probably one of my favorite of his films. But you know what it is, it's the eyes.
Oh, yeah.
His eyes can be fucking scary. Like, his he knows that it's his eyes. His eyes have this, like, he kind of does like a bit of a Kubrick stare in a little bit, and he kind of lets his eyes just droop, and it just hits you in your soul, where you're like, I don't want to get him mad.
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, his unhingedness at the end, man, was like, don't do this to me now. Like, it's just like on the surface, it could sound so whiny, but it doesn't with from him. It's like he, and that's also the brilliant part, like this subtle kind of things that pop into your head once you think about it. But like all the other orderlies that he's like ordering around, they're all taller than him, but he still has this power over them and stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, but then like it's also cool because then at the end, then it flips too, because like Carla Guccino's character, the doctor, who is taller than him with hair pumps on and stuff like that, kind of like it's a showing of like who he really is. He is just like a mouse kind of
which
thing,
is it's know? So interesting, because I think, you know, when she first arrives, the way she's framed, because she's Emily Browning's like, I don't know, 5'6" or something, and like she's like the two like dudes behind her are like giants. It's like two shacks or something behind her, and it just like shows you that at the beginning she has no power, she has not taken her power yet. And then it's the same thing, Oscar Isaac, like he seems like he has this power, but like you said, Ariel, he just shrinks down. And just the way Snyder uses, you know, the height, like the heights of these actors and just the framing of everything is just masterfully done, I think. And on that note, I just kind of want to talk about how I think that Zack Snyder is, and this is no shock to anybody, but this is something that I think all of his films get talked about really positively, and even this one, you kind of mentioned it earlier, Alan, is just how amazing of a visual storyteller he is. Because this film, even if you could disagree with everything else we've said, you've got to agree that this film looks so unique and interesting, and the way that he's able to just give you so many details through visuals is really great. And
on that note, I had just learned too that essentially, speaking of details, essentially, Baby Doll's katana in the like fantasy like adventure
world, the dragon on it,
it literally tells the whole story. Like it,
I have to go back physically, and watch it. That's really cool.
You can't see it, but you did know, like production wise. They etched essentially like a mural, like a long story of the whole story, essentially visual, like a visual interpretation of it. It's on that katana.
So, that's really cool.
Speaking of detail.
Well, and I think that the big part of the reason that he is so visually talented like that is because he's one of these guys who got his start as a director of music videos. And that attention to detail, that ability to visual storytell comes through so much. And, you know, two other guys who I think that you could kind of compare him to, the three of these guys don't seem that similar at first until you are like, wow, the way that they have just kind of mastery of the camera and just going in and seeing this thing and moving over here. These guys all came from music videos. David Fincher, Michael Bay, and of course, Zachary Snyder. All of those guys are absolute, like anybody, even if you don't like Michael Bay, go and watch Ambulance. You know, Fincher, go watch Panic Room, watching, and then watch this, because they are able to just, like, you could watch this movie on mute, and it would, like Snyder has said, like, hey, a lot of people, this is going to go over their head, they're not going to get it, but maybe they can still just enjoy a really cool, visually stunning action film. So I think he's absolutely right about that, is even if this, so for me, that's why it's a 5-star movie. Honestly, I'm going to say 5 out of 5 stars. One of my favorite movies ever. I think it's on Letterboxd. It's the lowest ranked movie that I have 5 stars. I think it's like a 2.7 over average. I still have it at 5. I don't care what anybody else says. Like, because not only because of the incredible metaphor in it and the incredible storytelling, but God, it is just so beautiful. It is absolutely stunning in a way that a lot of movies feel very much, even especially going more today and with the kind of visual effects crisis and the way that effects companies are mistreated and the workers are just kind of overworked and all that, there's not, some of the visual effects do not look as pristine, but this one, and it's not just this dark grainy, sometimes it'll be like, just the way he plays with tone and color and all of this stuff is so, so well done.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree, because one of my favorite things of his films is the visuals. Like, I mean, one of the big things I hear too is, you guys have probably heard it too, that he gets along with everyone. Like, his actors love him, and even apparently, like, the visual effects departments where I don't know if it was, I think it might have been for Justice League, where I guess that they were saying that most of the time directors come in and they just kind of tell them, hey, I want you to do this, this, and this, whatever. Okay. Or sometimes the director won't even show up. And apparently Zack Snyder would actually come in to the visual effects department, like the CGI stuff, and be like, oh, I want it to be like this. And he sits down with everybody and he tries to paint the picture with them and try and show them like, hey, this is exactly how it should be and how I want you guys to do it. Like,
yeah, I think that's like what partially the reason why, because he put all that detail into it and gave visual effects artists kind of like their time, that's one of the reasons why like it got that's essentially and unfortunately got him in trouble with Warner Brothers with all the delays and stuff. So yeah,
because he takes the time, and I appreciate directors like that. And I mean, shit, like you guys were saying, you could mute it and just watch it for the awesome visuals, and they're gorgeous. Like you said, I love everything. It sounds dumb to say, but they're just very cinematic. I mean, redundant, I guess. But there's also times where, like, the imagery he paints just it hits just right. Like, you're like, yes, that's exactly how a dream or a fantasy sequence should be, because there is a stark difference between all the action scenes and everything, the cyberpunk stuff, where it feels like a different film at one point. But then when you go back to the asylum, it's so dark and gritty, and it feels very Arkham Asylum-ish. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like I think that's one of the big things with them that he does really well is visuals. I mean, fucking look at, I mean, I know people are going to give me shit, but for me, my number one is Batman v Superman. And I will go to death loving that film because I love so much of the visuals about it. Like, he paints, for me, I would want almost every frame in that film up on my wall. Like, it's stunning, and like images of all the heroes and everybody, like, just it's so powerful. And that's what he does really well. I mean, 300, when I saw 300, I was like, I immediately walked out of I saw the movie with my dad, and I was like, yeah, I want to go work out, because yep. I want to look as huge. And like, you know, this is way before Man of Steel, and like, you just like the way he has the capes draping and everything, and just even with these characters, like, they just look badass. Mm-hmm. And almost like mythic, and I love what he does with skies, where it kind of has this very religious look to it, almost like like you're reading mythology, essentially, and you're seeing it right there and there.
And I think that's a really, like, that word mythology you use, Alan, I think is so apt, because I think Snyder is obsessed with mythology. Because, you know, I mentioned before how, you know, his favorite film is Excalibur, this, like, great Arthurian myth, and how all of his films, like, you know, he's done so many comic book films, and those are just kind of our modern day mythology. And this, you know, mythology is essentially saying this is the power of stories. Mythologies are about all these stories that have permeated and changed cultures, and I think he recognizes the power in that. And so this is him making almost an original contained mythology. And I think that he is very apt in kind of creating a movie like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm super excited for his Rebel Moon, because,
dude, that's gonna be fucking
dope. Oh my gosh.
It has to be.
Oh my gosh.
Like, he just knows how to work a camera, and just like he was teasing, you know, all the DC, you know, his DC trilogy with all these like cool black and white photos, and like he's kind of teasing Rebel Moon, and you just look at that and you're like, yeah, this dude, number one thing he knows how to use is a camera. Like, he just, I'm excited for it.
And I think Rebel Moon is like essentially they're like going to a bit of a Top Gun kind of situation. Like, aren't they like legit going to like use kind of like cockpit kind of like, I think. Maybe?
Well, it's like his Star Wars kind of.
So oh, yeah. He wanted to make a Star Wars, but he couldn't get it. They wouldn't let him do it. So he was just like, you know what? I'll make my own Star Wars. And I think, you know, Star Wars is another one of these modern day mythologies that he's clearly so inspired by. So it'll be really cool to see his take on it. And I think I'm glad that he's not doing it with like the, okay, well, we have to do this. Because we talked about it on a solo episode, how Disney is like, you got to do this and this and this for Star Wars. And he, without him, and, you know, we've talked about obviously how much Warner Brothers had input in all, you know, him making all the DC movies. So he just kind of gets to make his own mythology. Same reason I was so excited for this. I'm excited for him to tell his own stories and not do another adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that it broke off of the Star Wars canon.
Yeah,
it's definitely going to be excited to see. I mean, as much as I'd love him to go back to doing DC stuff, and just even other
DC comics. Is he confirmed to not do, he's not going to be doing Man of Steel? Well, we don't know if Man of Steel 2 is even going to happen.
I don't think Henry Cavill
is
going to do it.
Coming back.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do it at this point. Henry Cavill is coming back.
Snyder. Snyder.
Yeah.
I think he's done, unfortunately. Yeah. I think it's just burned too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been too much bad blood, I think.
Mm-hmm. The Snyder cut, I think, was like his final, you know, like nail in the coffin of just being like, all right, I got to do my trilogy, you know, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It's going to be very weird. Well, no, I don't think it'll be very weird. I think it is actually. Hopefully will be a good direction. And I'm very, you know, like, speaking on that, since we don't have like a DC centric podcast, we only go Marvel, which is the right. But I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
I guess I'll leave that one.
When are you gonna make Mother Boxes and whatever? Something.
Yeah.
Mother Boxes and Lantern Rings.
That's awesome. Yeah. It would be very fitting with the Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones, since one doesn't exist right now anymore, or at least for right now. but I mean, like, I'm hoping, especially with the handle of James Gunn at the helm, that we'll see, you know, something unique from DC and something connected. Which is like what they're striving for. I mean, I'm fine with it going either way. If it's not connected or connected, I just want them to very much choose a side at this point. And I think that's something that they hadn't done yet. And that's what's kind of like been their bother, you know, kind of thing with that. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to not see Zack Snyder's like kind of tone on that universe anymore. Mm-hmm.
Which but is interesting because I'm just like they're just grabbing anybody who worked on, they're just grabbing the people who worked on Dawn of the Dead 2004 to run their cinematic universe. They're like, okay, we got Snyder. Who wrote that movie? Oh, James Gunn. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Dawn of the Dead is probably one of the best remakes out there. So I don't see why it's wrong.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very cool. I'm really hopeful for it because I've mentioned to you guys at least that the DC universe did not come to play that well with at Comic-Con, and I was very, very, very pretty much disappointed with them of just like showing essentially two movies, and it's movies that, you know, one came out in Black Adam to reception, and then one's been delayed again, for no reason at all, which was Shazam. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting world that we're going to be living in with them. But I am very excited with Zack Snyder doing a once again an original concept. I too haven't seen Army of the Dead. I've heard mixed things. I don't know if I'm.
Yeah, I heard a lot of mixed things about it too.
I've wanted to like it so bad. But
yeah, such a piece the thing, of shit. The thing only with that, I think it comes down to like. Story, like, I don't know about story, because like, yeah, it does seem to Ocean's 11 kind of Dawn of the Dead kind of mixture.
That's what it should have been, but it wasn't that. That's what it fucking did. That's what I was stoked about. I was like, oh, it's a heist movie with the zombies, and it's just like, no, it's just really fucking
depressing. I know that it's very much, speaking of like bearing the lead of the story, I know that the trailers to that movie didn't paid any like gratitude or anything
the
like that.
Trailers I and the that. First act.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That I don't know about that movie. We'll see. But yeah, we'll see. Hopefully that Rebel Mood is very much a return to what Sucker Punch, you know, kind of like was too in that kind of movie. But yeah. With that, anything else that you guys want to add about Sucker Punch?
No? I mean, I think I said it all. I think we said a lot.
Yeah, we said a lot, definitely. Yeah. But with that, yeah, thanks everybody for listening. We do have another few podcasts that we have as part of our Undercast company banner. Derek has just started to release his long-awaited season 2 of Gateway episodes, which explores the season miniseries and introducing himself and introducing his guests to miniseries that they've never seen with a Gateway episode. And as always, I have my podcast called You've Never Seen? ! Where I introduce somebody, or I am introduced by somebody else, of a movie that I've never seen but is considered part of pop culture and cinematic history. And then, as we aforementioned, we have Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones for all of our Marvel content, and we'll be probably discussing Black Panther. I don't know. Yeah, She-Hulk. That episode. Too? Did you already talk to She-Hulk?
We did She-Hulk. So Black Panther is going to be should be out actually before this episode comes out. That's going to be with me and Perry Constantine from the Superhero Cinephiles podcast, which is should definitely go check that podcast out. Me and Ariel have both been on it. Ariel was just recently on it talking about The Losers. That was a really great episode. I listened to it this morning. So definitely check that out as well.
And as always, thanks everybody for being amazing. And see you talking to you.
You know who else got stabbed? Superman. Bye, everybody.